Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy. Whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage, the Magic Wand should be your go-to. With powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns, it's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this Mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator.
So shame to me is a feeling around not being able to live the way you want because of judgment or someone putting a feeling on you or something that's been ingrained on you that makes you feel that you're wrong or that you're gross or that you're, you know, not enough. That's my definition of shame.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. So, what cultural or religious programming do you have around sex? Even if you didn't grow up in a church, sexual shame is, in so many ways, the air we breathe. But here's the reality. You didn't put those thoughts there. Someone else did. And on today's show with guest Aaron Tillman, we're calling out those judgmental messages and choosing the sex messaging that actually serves us. The result? A radically more authentic, more liberated sex life. As an inclusive dating coach, Aaron is no stranger to shame, and she's heard it all from her clients. Whether it was that one rude thing a partner said that haunted you for years, or a parent that told you masturbation was dirty, shame loves to hide in the shadows and hold you back in the bedroom. So on today's show, Aaron and I talk about how we healed our own sexual shame, dropped performative sex, and got comfortable with the word no. You'll also learn the difference between no and not yet when it comes to dating, how to make good choices on dating apps, and how to flip your internal shame script. All right, intentions with Emily. For each episode, I want to start off by setting an intention for the show. I do it, and I encourage you to do the same. So when you're listening, what do you want to get out of this episode? My intention is to help you see shame, like really, really see it, so you can heal it. Shame thrives in secrecy, but once we shed light on it, it starts to dissolve, and that leads to a more liberated sex life. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My new article, Overcoming 4 Common Sex Fears, is up at sexwithemily.com. Also, check out my YouTube channel for more sex tips and advice. If you want to ask me more questions, leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily or call my hotline 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. Always include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show, and totally cool to change your name if you want to remain anonymous. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Shame. The feeling is painful and it's powerful. Shame stems from a belief that you have failed or you're inadequate in some way. In a lot of cases, or most cases, it's a result of trauma or like a narrative that's just playing in your head that was used to control your actions or set up as an almost unattainable idea of perfection. Now, the reactions to shame are just as varied as the causes. In some cases, what we do is we'll hide, we withdraw, we keep things that feel shameful, super secretive. In other cases, we channel this energy into like anger and we get mad because we think like, I'm angry and I deserve this. Or we might even turn into a sexual desire and we actually find some kind of pleasure in replaying a trauma by being shamed. Why is this my sexual desire and it's part of my shame? So it can all get wrapped up in so many things. But the thing is, in most cases, the result can be a strained relationship with ourselves and with our loved ones. And while it serves us to have healthy boundaries, beliefs, and values, the most common repercussion of a strict, controlling, or religious background is that we somehow fall short. And then we find ourselves in this same loop. We feel humiliated and, well, ashamed that we can't meet these expectations, and that just becomes this vicious cycle. So truly, the healthiest thing we can do for ourselves is create realistic expectations, reset our beliefs once we understand what they are and where they came from, our beliefs about sex, about everything really, and allow ourselves to be human. Like, we're human and we are not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And forgive what we might have been taught as wrong or sinful. We might even remember when we were taught it. Like, maybe we were children and we're still carrying it around. Because this dialogue could be religious or cultural. Or maybe in porn you saw something and you're like, well, I don't look that way. And it could just be a one-time thing. I hear this all the time. Or one partner shamed you and then you're carrying it around forever until you release it today. That's what we're doing. We have to remember that we can reprogram these beliefs. We must. There is a way to move through the shame, and it's okay to practice self-love. In fact, this is what's going to cure us all, is self-love and empathy. In fact, the antidote to shame is actually empathy and self-love. But also self-love, you know, the kind of self-love I'm talking about, touching ourselves, all of that is okay. That's how we learn to love ourselves. And that's how we learn to have a healthy relationship with sex, with our bodies, and with others. Let me talk to you about my experience with shame. First off, I think we're never really done peeling back the layers of understanding ourselves and of shame. When I look back at my relationships early on, like let's say the relationships in my 20s, when I think about shame, I think I could have had such a healthier relationship if I was able to actually be honest with my partners at the time. And I knew all the things I know about communication, all the things that I tell all of you, I would feel like, wow, you know what? The sex is getting kind of boring. I'm not really into it. And so what I would do is I would blame myself. I would think that it was my fault the sex was bad because I couldn't masturbate with a partner. I'd think, well, maybe they don't like me. And if I bring it up, it's probably my fault. My thing is I blame myself for a lot of things. Like I have a very negative self-tape that plays in my head, which is just filled with shame. It's just shame, shame, shame. And so I think that I was so afraid to confront the problems in a relationship and afraid what a partner would say that I just was like, everything's fine. Everything's good. I'll fake orgasms and I'll just be the perfect lover, whatever that means, and the perfect no pressure girlfriend. But truly, that wasn't doing anybody a service. I could have said, listen, I'm having insecurities right now, or I actually can't orgasm. And then I would have been able to figure out how to do it at a much earlier time in my life. The most common themes that I've seen with shame from all my listeners is that somehow it's just wrong to desire sex. And to even talk about sex is wrong. It's taboo. We're going to be blamed for it. Other people aren't going to like us. That sex is just wrong across the board. And masturbation is evil and wrong. And we're going to go to hell. And we shouldn't have to masturbate if we're in a relationship. Or the common themes, religion. You grew up in a home where you were programmed that sex in any other way besides procreation is wrong or evil. And so as a result of that, a lot of you can probably relate to what I'm saying right now. You might be in a relationship right now where you're thinking, yeah, we've never talked about it before. We won't talk about sex. And I think that now that you see and you've been listening to Sex with Emily, or even if this is your first time, you might be realizing now that that's actually the only way you're going to get through the shame and you're going to get to the other side of it, which is actually having a healthy sexual relationship, is to actually talk about it and to say, I know that maybe we've never done this before. And I know this might be weird. And we might even both have beliefs that it's not okay to talk about sex. But I think we can agree that we both want to be great lovers to each other, or you maybe want to be a great lover to yourself. So it's a great time to start and think, what kind of conversations can I be having today to break through my shame spiral? I'm shameful in certain relationships where I've had to be more vulnerable now. Like in people that I'm dating, I realize that in a lot of ways, I was still holding my heart back. And in some ways, I realize the more open I am with that, I'm going to get hurt and not everyone's going to love me and I'm going to get rejected. And what I've had to learn is being real and vulnerable about what we want is actually the greatest act of self-love. And if someone is going to reject me and they're not going to accept me for that, I have to first say that's okay and love myself because I was doing a great act of self-care by asking for it. But also they're sending you a message that they just might not be the right person for me. The first step in flipping the shame script is just to write it down. Write down what those things are, those things you think you cannot say, and then infuse that, replace that with some empathy, some self-love, so it's not keeping us in our shame spiral. And this way, we can move forward with love. Erin Tillman, CSE, is a certified intimacy coordinator, sex educator, inclusive dating and consent empowerment coach, author of The Consent Guidebook, and media personality based in Los Angeles. She is the executive director of Sex Positive Los Angeles and for over 10 years has been dedicated to making conversations around consent, identity, and allyship less taboo and more easily digestible. Find Erin on Twitter at Dating Advice Girl, Instagram at Miss Erin Tillman, and at her website, erintillman.com. How did you become the Dating Advice Girl?
So everything started pre-Tinder, pre-YouTube, pre-Instagram, pre all these things, which I'm totally dating myself here, dating myself. But yeah, so I basically started a blog. At the time, it was very binary. Why are there so many double standards between men and women? Guys can have sex and girls can't. And then girls get shamed for it and guys don't. It was very binary. Long story short, at that time, it kind of struck a nerve with people. And for some reason, at the time, there weren't many female voices talking about those differences, which led to me writing it for a column, which led to me speaking at colleges around dating safety. Once the app scene hit, then I started to really nerd out because I was single. I've so many waves and ebbs and flows in relationships. I've been in the field quite a bit, I should say.
So you've been dating, not dating, probably in relationships, out of relationships. So right now, what's the status today, Erin Tillman? What's happening today?
Yes, yes, Emily. Yes, yes. So I'm in a beautiful, beautiful relationship, actually. I'm actually a weird success story. Not weird. Because, a lot of people are like, oh, online dating sucks or dating apps suck. But so I met my partner on Tinder. It's a beautiful relationship that was unexpected. He's a trans man. My whole life, I'm 40 years old, and my whole life, I only dated cisgendered men. Although my friends would say that he's very much on brand with all the guys I dated before because he looks similar. His everything's very similar to a lot of my guys because I liked a more effeminate man. Anyway, all that to say, love is love. And we met, and that's a whole other podcast, actually, our whole how we first date and all the unknowns and things, even though I have trans people in my life and I have non-binary people in my life and all these categories. But to date somebody that you've never dated before is a different experience for sure. But he's a bit of an activist. He's a director producer. He's so forgiving if I don't know all the terms. He's so supportive and it's beautiful.
Love is love. I agree. I think it's who you're attracted to, how wonderful that you can be open. And so dating a trans man, can you just explain that? To us, to listeners.
The correct term, I said trans man. Trans masculine is more accurate. He doesn't consider himself a man. He is someone who's always been masculine of center. So, let's break it down. Let's break it down in layman's
just
terms.
Just because I got to. Thank you.
So my boyfriend was assigned female at birth, assigned that gender at birth.
Okay.
AFAB is another term for that. My boyfriend and so many people like him have not felt that gender that they were assigned. So, and the thing is, I think at this point, 2020, I think we all know people who just were not what the stereotype is of the gender that they were assigned, right? Someone who was maybe a female person who was more masculine or a male person who was more feminine and all these things. And so I just feel like in the last several years, let's say less like five, let's be honest, last 5 years, maybe around the last few years, people have really been able to embrace who they really are.
I think so too.
Right. It's just this is who we are. This is who I am. It's been an interesting process for myself too. Just going back real quick, even though my boyfriend, his name is Jet, he presented masculine. He went through the transition process a few years ago. And so even for him, it's been an eye-opening experience. for me dating him, I mean, there's definitely been, especially initially, even though, again, I've dated people who are, he's very similar to in a lot of ways. Like if you were to like line him up right. with all my exes, they all look alike a lot of ways. But all that to say, there are questions that come up around, what does this mean about me? Does this mean that I'm someone I, you know, didn't expect to be? Who I thought I was, is that, am I not that person anymore? You know, am I gay? Am I this? Am I that? And so, I mean, I don't like to claim categories. I guess some people could put me in certain categories, but also weirdly, a lot of my queer and gay friends are like, no, you're totally a straight couple still. Because I'm femme and he's masculine. Anyway, I get the masculine, feminine.
And then also I feel like, why do we have to? Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, right now, why, exactly. It means where you're at now and you're in love and you're in a good relationship. So why does it matter where I'm at? You were just on Tinder looking for someone that you were attracted to. And that's who you found.
Well, let me just go back to that real quick. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Like, right before that, I had gotten out of a really weird relationship that ended really bizarrely.
I can relate.
I was like, you know, I as a dating coach, right, it would be bad if I didn't do some self-reflection. And so I was like, you know, what are my patterns? If I'm dating a similar type of person in terms of personality and I'm not liking it, what am I doing wrong and what can I do to change it? So I really took a hard look at myself and I'm like, you know what? I really just want to meet new people who are aligned with who I am and what I'm interested in and what kind of fun I want to have. And so I went on Tinder mainly to meet new humans. I switched it to men and women. So ordinarily he wouldn't have popped up, but because he was in the category of non-binary, trans, something other than a cisgender,
yeah.
assigned female at birth, feels that way. Like I was born a girl, feel like a woman. Because I switched it to something more than that, Jet popped up.
Right.
And so I was open to that. Now, not everyone is, and that's not everyone's orientation. I mean, some would argue that I've always been some form of queer, maybe a little bit gay. I just never met someone that I wanted to date. I mean, that there's a whole argument there.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting that someone go against their orientation.
What I love that you just said is, and this is the advice that I think is such great advice, is that when you go through a breakup, rather than rushing out there to try to like heal your wound so you don't have to feel and you don't have to learn anything and start just dating or get under to get over or all the things that we do, you actually did the work. Stopping and saying, what can I learn from this? Like, hold up, there's a pattern. Maybe my picker is broken. I'm repeating the same cycle. And by even checking that box or like moving the bar over and saying, I'm open, was what brought you the person that you're in love with right now. And so just real quick though about the work, like what did your process look like after your last relationship that brought you to where you are now in a healthy relationship?
Yeah. Great question. So it basically got to a point where I was just tired of the pattern I was in. For my clients that I coach, that's the point they have to reach. Like I can, just like you, like we give our clients tips and advice. If they're not ready to get to that place, then there's nothing we can say, right? We can give a nudge. We can give, okay, well, here's some steps. But if someone's really not ready to take some sort of new leap or try something new to break a pattern, then there's no way we can help them. So I just hit a place where I was like, I am not happy with what I've been choosing. And a lot of it is a choice. Choosing meaning, I don't mean that in a shamey way, and I don't mean it in terms of any sort of violence or aggression.
Right.
You don't choose that. What I'm saying is sometimes we see a pattern or we see a certain type of person that we're attracted to and we'll maybe ignore certain other things. We make a choice there. Also, a lot of the apps have a premium service that's either you pay weekly or monthly that basically can cut your time in half. So I'm not endorsed by any dating sites, though I do consult with some of them sometimes. So I'll just use Tinder as an example. They have an option. I think Bumble has it too, but you pay per week to see who's already swiped for you.
Oh.
So that cuts your time in half. It's also a huge ego boost to go on the app, open it up and see who's already selected you. And then you can go through and be like, oh, these are the people who think I'm cute.
Yeah, amazing.
Who of these people might I be interested in? It makes it so that you're not just endlessly swiping your life away and just feeling like, oh my God, I hate this.
Right. That is a great advice too. Cause I think, if they're new to the dating game, and they can also check out your site, your information, cause you give a lot of tips about this as well, about dating. Cause I want to get into our topic Because today I want to talk about shame. I want to do a deep dive into shame with you. And I want to know, like, how have you dealt with shame in your life? And, like, first off, how would you even define shame? Let's start with that.
Whew. So
what does shame mean to you?
Yes. So shame to me is a feeling around not being able to live the way you want because of judgment or someone putting a feeling on you or something that's been ingrained on you that makes you feel that you're wrong or that you're gross or that you're, you know, not enough. That's shame. For me, that's my definition of shame. In my life, I've been very lucky in the sense that, you know, I have a loving family, especially my mother. You know, I've always felt supported by her emotionally. And I like to be a straight shooter. I like to be honest. I've had the luxury of not having to feel too much shame in my life. Having said that, we started this by talking about my trans boyfriend.
Yeah.
And there is so much that comes up, not in the shamey way. I'm so proud of him. And if you see us on like social media, we're always like posting, like we're real goofy together. So we're always posting like a bunch of stuff, videos and photos and stuff. But there are moments where there are people who've known me my whole life, certain family members as well, like cousins and things, that there's a feeling that comes up of what are they going to think now? Do they think that I'm not their equal now, or is there some judgment they have about me? And so it's not in the shame realm. It's adjacent to shame, the feeling
shame
that
adjacent,
I'm describing.
Yeah. I was just wondering because it just keeps coming. I feel like it's like sneaky, like shame is so sneaky. Like you don't even realize it.
And
you look around, you're like, oh, that's why I'm not telling one. And the more you reveal it, you're like, oh, like that's where the light comes in. Like our darkness is like our secrets, right? And then you reveal it, like I'm so shameful. And then it comes out. So I've just.
Well, and to your point, growing up, I grew up in a small town in Ohio. And, you know, it was very homogenous. It's a very homogenous place. I grew up Southern Ohio. And so, like you said, it's ingrained to see how your, you know, gay friends are treated in school, in junior high or in high school. Or, you know, I was the only Black girl in my grade. And then I think in my school, there were like five of us, maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember when like there was this new Black boy that like moved to our school and everyone's like, you should date him. And
right.
I'm like,
exactly. Right. I'm from Michigan. So I get the like upbringing, small town. Yeah, it's just so homogenous, which is why I end up in Los Angeles. After the break, more with Erin Tillman. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. I want to hear about other work you've been doing. I know you've been doing a lot of work around consent as well. Like you wrote a book on consent. So let's talk about what it is and what inspired you to kind of delve more deeper into it, which I think is we need this right now.
To boil it down really simply, because I feel like there are a lot of people who are like, oh my gosh, consent, it's overwhelming and it takes the sexiness out of it. So consent is basically a checking in to see that you're on the same page. Like in layman's terms, that's the basis for what it is. Are we both in agreement that we both want this thing to happen now? It can be overwhelming if we overthink it. Really, the basis is someone enthusiastic about what they're going to do with you? Are you in agreement? Are you both enthusiastic about what is being proposed? Okay, that's the basis for it, okay? And I don't want to minimize anyone's anxiety around all of that, especially if someone's newly single. If there's a scenario where you're proposing something where somebody's like, I don't know, or like if there's any sort of hesitation in that person, the new normal is no. Hesitation equals no.
Yes.
Which is fine.
I love it.
It's about getting, yeah,
it's true.
It's really about getting to know the person, taking the time to understand like what someone's likes and dislikes are. You know, in my book, we're talking about,
I love this,
yes, no, maybe lists, which is once you get to know the person, there's certain things you can discuss in terms of sex and intimacy. Oh, do you like to be kissed on the cheek? Yes, no, or maybe. Do you like to be kissed on the mouth? Yes, no, or maybe. Do you like to be touched in the genital areas? Yes, no, maybe. Do you like, you know,
right, spanked, whatever.
Things?
And then you find where your yes is. Yeah, I love that. I love tools.
Right. And there's a way to make those fun too. It doesn't have to be so clinical, because I think part of the nervousness around this is that we've made the topic very serious. The Me Too movement happened, a couple of years ago, the height of it, the Me Too movement. That's when I wrote my book. That's what inspired me to write my book. Although I've been, again, a dating coach at that time for 10 years, and I'd been talking about consent a little, that definitely heightened it. Even though the Me Too movement was started more about workplace harassment and things. I mean, I was like, as a dating coach, how do I not talk about consent?
You have to. And I want to go back to one thing you said, because I think this is like the crucial moment, is that not only if someone else is enthusiastic, but getting to know our no's. Like, I feel like as a people pleaser, and I'd like to say I'm a reformed people pleaser, but I'm not there yet. I still am in many ways, just with everybody. And so to even know, am I saying yes because I want to be liked? Like, is it really a yes? Is it a hell yes? And if it's not a hell yes, well, then it's a no. Going from there thinking, okay, well, if I don't actually want to, let's say I just met this person, we've been chatting online, and now we've got a FaceTime date tonight, and do I want to get naked with this person? That is definitely where you have to be hell yes. And then pay attention if somebody's like, are you sure? Come on. Like, I'm not going to see you for 2 months. Think about it. Take a pause and say, am I doing this because I want to be liked? Because the other thing, what's confusing, the next layer of that is being able to say no, but then like, because I think what we do is we either think it's a hell yes or it's a nope, I can't, no, I don't want to do it. But then to be able to say no, not right now, or right now I'm feeling it's a no, tonight is a no, but I'm loving getting to know you right now. So you're still letting that person know that this isn't a no forever. I mean, we don't know yet, but no, and it doesn't have to end in this moment. We can still find other common ground. Now, if that person can't take that, I always say, if they're like, well, fine, then I'm out. Well, good. They're doing you a favor. Then let them go find somebody else who's ready to go along with their plan. And I had to learn that. It's such a somatic experience too. Like for me, like an embodied spirit, learning to figure out like, where is my yes? If I'm feeling a no, like maybe my chest is getting tight. My stomach is like, I'm uncomfortable. Like it took me so long from somebody also who's been sort of was shut down and had to learn to open up. Like, where am I feeling things in my body? That's like a practice as well.
It's really important too that we are okay hearing no. On the other end of that, listen, I think first of all, as Americans, we don't like no, okay? Which is not okay. That's a conditioning thing in our society. I don't like it, but it is a thing. I think everybody, most people I know, they hear the word no and it's like like that stings a little bit. We have to be okay hearing no sometimes as well.
Yeah.
And we have to reframe no as, okay, maybe this person, like, again, if we're getting a soft no from somebody, that means they're not enthusiastic right now. But if they're showing, if they're saying to you, oh, you know, just not this moment, but I'm interested at some point, take that no gracefully. It's really important to take that no gracefully. That person is being honest. They're telling you, why would you want someone to lie to you?
Right, exactly.
And just be like, yeah, I'm fine. And then something really bad happens, right? They're showing you that, oh my gosh, like, I'm not quite ready. I respect you enough to tell you the truth about myself right now. And I think that there's maybe some sort of future here. So right now is a no, but oh, okay. I like this person. They're not a no. They're a no right now, but I'm going to take that no and hope for the best.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Cause we're so afraid that if someone says no to us, something's wrong with us. Like, so we push it. Cause like, I can't take no, cause I'm being rejected and that's painful that I'm not loved or you're banning me, like that I'm not accepted. And then a lot of times we're not okay saying no, cause we want to be pleasers and we're so afraid, especially around sex. I feel like there is a lot of shame around that. Like as women were told, at least I was raised that all in a very, you know, heterosexual, heteronormative world that with men, that sex was about pleasing men. It was about what they wanted. And everything I did was about their pleasure. How do I look sexy? How do I perform? About, you know, and it wasn't about what I wanted ever. I had to learn that through the process of, you know, probably doing my work. Who knows if I would, you know, people are still learning this every day. But it's almost like we have shame too, women. It's sort of a shame tied into shame too. Like I didn't perform or I wasn't a great lover. So the more I say yes to somebody, then I don't have to deal with my own like shame or my own insecurities around not being enough. I mean, do you feel like that?
I hear that, but then the flip side of that is you say yes when you're not ready, and then there's some whole bunch of other crap you have to deal with.
Yeah.
But no, I feel you. I mean, I think we're a lot, again, let's bring it back to women, right? Yeah. There's so much shame around sexuality, women's sexuality. There's like this heightened performative sexuality that's okay and porn and things, which I am not anti-porn, and I'm actually friends with a few sex workers and people in the realm. And then there's this other side that's like, no, don't be sexual. Don't be sexy. Don't wear anything. Cause if you wear something that's sexy, then something bad could happen to you.
You like, ask for
so
it.
Much shame around those things. Right. Mm-hmm. So then no wonder we have so much that we have to work on in ourselves around. We meet somebody, we're human beings that are sexual. We want to be intimate and sexual with them, but then, oh crap, all these messages I've been getting about, oh, well, you're a bad girl or you're a bad person if you want that thing or that's dirty. We don't know body part names.
Exactly.
We don't look at ourselves. Half of us haven't had like adequate sex ed.
At all.
You know, there's so many layers, well, right?
Yeah. So I'm curious, how do you deal with that right now? Because what's been so shocking, astounding to me is after working as a sex educator for 15 years and then leaving Michigan 30 years ago and then having like a niece and coming up who's like 19 and was my intern last summer. And I thought she came out from Michigan and I thought, oh, it's different. Sure enough, Aunt Em, teach me about blowjobs. Teach you about this. Da, da. She didn't know about orgasms, you know, because it's the first time she actually tuned in. There still is that performance thing. So what I'm assuming is a lot of your clients right now as well, you probably still have to deal with them saying, like, just feeling that they have to be pleasers or that it's wrong or they're not going to be likable if they don't perform. So how do you break that? I know people have to be ready for the message, but how do you work with people on that as well?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, the main point here is self-development. So, you know, I officially call myself a dating empowerment coach. The point is to empower my clients to feel better and more confident, right? So whatever that means for them, whether that's just to put themselves out there digitally on dating sites, whether that's sexually, all the things, it does take some self-work. I do feel like, you know, there's so many, you know, like yourself and other sex ed colleagues of mine who have so many amazing, like, exercises, some that are like, sit in front of a mirror, like open yourself to the world.
You have to.
And look at your body parts and love your body parts. And, you know, it's almost like a re-education of what our bodies are and loving your body and what it looks like. On social media, you'll see pictures of vulvas like floating around and how different they all look.
I love that.
And I feel like I first saw the variety of vulvas, like maybe the last 5 years of my life.
The vulva gallery. I think that's one that I follow on Instagram. And I'm always like, oh, the vulva gallery. Yeah, because you're like, I didn't know there was that many. They're all different. They're like snowflakes. But we are so shamed. Walk around feeling like we are somehow broken because you've seen this too, because we've been in this same amount of time in the sense of like porn. I don't think there was as much vulva shame 15 years ago before porn became as – there was other shame. But now they're like, oh, now my vagina's broken. Now my vulva's not right. And I've seen them in porn, you know. Yeah, because they're cheating.
And hair and not hair and like, you know, all these things.
So just accepting of that. And like,
that's where, you know, first of all, there's the self part of it. And second part is partner selection. I think it's really important that when you're choosing partners and intimate partners and, you know, life partners, that it's really important that you choose people who aren't going to make you feel bad about how your body looks, how your body smells. I mean, listen, I have some stories around that kind of stuff where it's like body chemistry and like smell, like odor chemistry is a real thing. And, you know, I remember I said to a partner once way back, I was like, I think there's something you don't like about me. And he was like, I gotta be honest, I don't like the way you smell. And I was like, you know what? Like, and this was like, he even said, he's like, even coming out of the shower, he's like, there's just something. And I was like,
that's,
you know,
real.
It was so hurtful to hear.
Of course.
It's so hurtful to hear. But I was like, you know what? I'm so glad. I mean, listen, we can tell, like, intuition, or like, you can I'm very intuitive, but also you can tell if someone's not really into you.
Yeah.
I was like, I know he's not. So I'm like, just tell me what the deal is. I'm so glad he told me, because I cannot imagine spending years and years and years. And again, for everyone listening, that person's doing you a blessing. The person that says goodbye to you or breaks up with you or says you're this or you're that, thank goodness. Because what kind of life would that be, to be with somebody who's either half enthusiastic, not enthusiastic, or just thinks you're gross or whatever? Like, it's just not fair to that person, and it's not fair to you.
These are from my listeners. I'm thinking, I'd love to get your advice, help me answer some of these questions. We asked some questions. If people had things around shame, they had questions for us. Angela says, people's reactions to hearing about how many people you've slept with can cause shame. And the gender equality here is a huge issue for lots of women. Their body count is supposed to be low. Well, for many, though not all, men, it doesn't matter as much. What are your thoughts on this?
Literally, this is how I started my career.
I love it.
Again, it was like, that's my blog. Here's the thing. Again, first of all, I don't know if, is it anyone's business how many people you've slept with, for one?
Nope.
I don't know if that's relevant. I guess if somebody asked you, I don't know. There's so many people who say just lie about it. I don't like to lie about that stuff. But also, I just feel like if someone's asking you, first of all, like, what's the context that they're asking you? Because there is a double standard.
Yes.
Because we got to be real about it, right? There is a double standard with this. And someone might judge you. I feel like my instinct wants to say that anyone who's going to judge you for it isn't someone you should be dating anyway. But again, I just don't necessarily feel it's that it's anyone's business, because we are realistically in a judgmental society.
I agree. The reason why we are asking, usually why people ask, is because we want to know where we measure up. So do you have more experience than me? Do you have less experience? Do I have to step it up? And all I want to say there is that, first off, you could have slept with hundreds and hundreds of people. And I will tell you from experience, I've slept with people like, oh, he's been with so many people and he is not the best lover. So just because you've been with so many people does not mean you are a great lover. You might just be hitting and quit it all over town all day long, but that does not mean that you know what the hell you're doing. That's one thing. And the other,
amen.
Right? It's so true. I'm like, astounding. Maybe you should just slow down and pick one. And in fact, I've had some wonderful lovers who were married for 10 years and they came out of a relationship where they were like two people maybe. And it was beautiful because they knew how to pay attention. They knew how to be communicate around sex. That's how you became a great lover. It's not by a bunch of skills and not get a lot of notches on the bedpost. It's about learning to communicate and be present. The other thing I say when someone asks you that, and I feel like it's kind of a younger person's thing, maybe more in your 20s, you're asking, although it still comes up, I just say, you know what? Right now, I'm focused on the sex that we're having and it's awesome. So how can we, like, this is the only sex I'm remembering right now is the sex that we're having.
No, that's a perfect
answer. That's literally what I say, like, shut them down. Shut them down, because you are just using it. And the standards we're basing on is not anything that's actually real evidence or means anything anyway, because usually it's to shame.
Completely.
Okay. So we've got another one here. So this is from Leilani, and she says, growing up Asian American and Catholic, the shame game is real. Sherilyn wrote, growing up in a Christian household, being told sex was only meant to be shared with one person. So there's so many more people who have programming from religious or cultural belief systems that they desperately want to break. I hear this day in and day out. So how do you advise people? Like, what are your thoughts? How do you grow and create new beliefs for yourself in order to move beyond the shame that is created by religion? And this is something that, oh God, it's so tough. How do you deal with people dealing with this shame about, because all the time people are like, oh, I can't masturbate or I can't do this because it's wrong in religion. How do you help people look at that?
It's like the age old question I mean, seriously, it's really awful and I'm really sad about it. And I feel like so many things in my life have gone against what it is to be a Christian or a good Christian. Right. And so, or, you know, in certain, whatever the religious path is, I do feel like there, again, back to shame, there's so much shame there. We're so lucky in Los Angeles. There's a lot of very inclusive religious institutions or like Christian churches and things here that are more inclusive and like accept gay people, not accept, but you know, it's like all are welcome. I feel like if there's a way to find your spiritual community that is more inclusive in those ways, that's going to be helpful. Because even though it feels like, and trust me, again, growing up in small town Ohio, it does feel like all insert religious group here are like this.
Yeah.
And it's not true. The challenge is to find other people who are more accepting within your religion or within your spiritual practice. Because there are people who are who aren't just like, oh, shutting you down or making you feel bad about these things.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
that's the best answer.
No, that's awesome.
It's find your tribe.
Find your people, which is like, and you might have to leave your town like we did. And it's just the knowing of saying, okay, you know what? I feel right now like something in me feels wrong about what you say. Like, I think it's wrong to touch myself because of I was told that it was wrong. And if I have a partner, I shouldn't need to masturbate. What do I do with that? I'm like, okay, well, take a moment. It's not sitting with you. Maybe think, okay, where did I first hear that? Oh, it was church or it was my parents. Does it still serve me? Do I believe that? Or did someone else believe that? But now I'm a 30-year-old woman or I'm a 40-year-old man. I get to choose if it still serves me and does it still, is it still who I am? And you got to like separate that. And that takes some work even realizing, because sometimes we're just on autopilot, like masturbation's wrong, sleeping before marriage, sex is wrong. And if I have to initiate, I'm a slut or whatever the things that you believe. And then you go, oh, is that true still? And it's like checking it and then finding your people. Okay, Erin, thank you so much for your time. This is awesome. I love talking to you. We could do this for hours. I have to ask you the 5 quickie questions we ask all of our guests. Ready?
Excellent.
All right, Erin, what is your biggest turn on?
Biggest turn on is, well, I'm going to go 5 love languages and say acts of service.
Okay. Biggest turn off?
Rude, jerky people.
What makes good sex?
Taking things slow and really being present with your partner.
Something you tell your younger self about sex and relationships. Or one thing, yeah.
That porn is entertainment and there's no one way to do it.
Love it. Number 1 sex tip.
Be present and be consensual.
I love it. Thank you so much, Erin, for being here. That's it for today's episode. See you on Tuesday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.